Hello, everybody. The afternoon introduction by I think Kira, right? Keisha, I'm sorry. Keisha is actually correct. The basis of our foundation is founded on Schiller's words that it is through beauty that one precedes freedom. This is the whole concept of what our foundation is supposed to be. Now, a little bit about me first. I was born in the post Cultural Revolutionary era of China, and I came to America with my mother in the late 80s when she became an exchange doctor with the World Health Organization. I started learning the piano as well as Chinese calligraphy at the same time when I was 7. I think I was very much a product of my generation in that by the time I went to college, I went to NYU to study finance. I listened to all the cool music then, abandoned my classical music, and for quite a while I worked in finance, and all my spare time was spent most of my free time then was spent either in nightclubs or in lounges. What actually got me away from this was the crash of 2008, the financial crash of 2008, and coming to a realization that we are actually in a completely devastated nation that has a lot of crisis and a lot of problems. It was also the same time that I started listening to. Went back to listening to classical music again. It started with the Chopin Nocturne in C minor, the C minor series, and it got me back to studying Bach and Beethoven and the many great classical composers. Now, what I was also discovering then was one of the people that I became friends with when I was much younger, Tian Jiang. A little bit about Tian was that Tian grew up actually during the Cultural Revolution. His father was a Western classical musician, an opera singer. And so he was censored during the Cultural Revolution. Cultural Revolution was when all classical arts, both Chinese and Western, was banned in China. All the intellects were persecuted ruthlessly. So Tian grew up learning to play the piano on one of the few state-owned piano that was allowed to be used from time to time in private, and his father taught him in secret. He had to learn everything classical in secret with an ear out for the Red Guards, because if they were caught, they'd be in the jail they go. Tian was 9 by the time the Cultural Revolution ended, and he was in his teens when Isaac Stern, the great American violinist, came to China in 1979 as a cultural ambassador. It was also the same time that he made the famous Academy Award-winning, actually, documentary titled Isaac Stern in China, From Mao to Mozart. And then it was then that Tian and 4 other young classical musicians, 2 violinists and a cellist, became the first group of 5 young people to ever be sponsored to come to study Western classical music in America. Now, Tian and I, actually, one of the things that really struck me about Tian in the post-2008 years was our discussion on the truthfulness or truthful classical musical performance, especially one particular discussion that we had about the Beethoven Kammerklavier, which one evening we sat down, and as we were listening to the Andre Schiff performance, he literally left his dinner untouched and tears streaking down his face. And at the end of it, he said, I saw my life flashing through my eyes. Now, I'll come back to the relevance of his story in a bit, because our foundation came about as a response to the growing concern by many people about the moral and intellectual decline of our society, especially our young. And a lot of people make comments about it, and they say, what do we do about it? People seem to think that it's certainly this kind of a violent culture is expressed in music, expressed in media of all sorts. But so this required an antidote. And we asked the question, well, what kind of social and cultural practices might we have that would actually change and revert such a trend? So as I was listening to the classical music and going back to practicing it, I realized that actually it is true that the music of great geniuses like Bach and Beethoven and Mozart and many others is a natural medium for through which young minds can naturally grow. So in the past 16 months, we have had 4 major concerts, and we also begun a choral program in 2 public schools as after-school programs. And so what happened was, what got all that started was that Tian, in 2011, informed me that he will be performing an all-Mozart concert. And I used that as an opportunity to jumpstart what we wanted to do, to put what I thought as something that needs to be done into action. So we got 150 tickets sponsored, and then we started co-calling the public schools. And in the beginning, a few of the principals said to me, "You want to give tickets to our students for an all-Mozart concert? Well, Jay-Z maybe, but not Mozart. I don't think anybody's interested." And I said, "Well, just ask, please." And a few weeks later, he called back among the others, especially that principal said, "Well, I think I have a few students." And a week later, after that, he said, "I have a boatful of students." And then he said, "Well, exactly how many tickets could I get? Could I get 50 tickets? You know, I have a lot of kids coming." So this concert in November of 2011 was attended by about 18 different schools. And it actually proved that, no, actually today, young people do have an interest in classical music. And it certainly disapproved this presumption that most people has, that, you know, classical music is not wanted by young people. The next thing that we did was a month later, and it had a slightly different purpose. It was to test the idea whether given a starting point of a real student interest, well, will classical music, without lecturing or preaching, could it be the medium for a natural and unforced improvement of the student's concentration, attention span, at a first encounter with a complex and even difficult classical work? Now, this concert, which was held at Bruno Walter Auditorium at Lincoln Center, was again performed by concert pianist Tian Jiang. Tian originally actually worried that the preferred Beethoven's 7th piano sonata was too difficult for the young, untrained students to understand, because it was in 4 movement and it's generally considered already to be difficult even for your typical classical music lovers. And it's actually true that when the concert started, a lot of people, the teachers and the students, about 200 of them, were kind of fidgety. But something really extraordinary happened, which was halfway into the second movement of the Beethoven piano sonata, the audience went pin drop quiet. Literally, all the concentration, attention just became concentrated onto the performer. And by the end of the concert, literally, you could feel this increase of attention and sharpness on the part of every single person in this audience. And, you know, the students were asking him questions after the concerts without us asking them to stay behind. They just were so thrilled and they were so interested. So it certainly disapproved this idea that, oh yes, you know, you have to make people become better by telling them what to do. Actually, no, the best thing to do is via the natural medium through which attention and concentration can be generated, which is actually classical music and classical composition and classical performances. Now, what happened after this concert was something slightly different. We wanted to actually test whether we can actually organize a large audience of largely or primarily non-classical music goers to what everybody actually called a impossible concert. It was a concert that happened last year, May of 2013, and it was at the most prestigious classical music concert hall in America at the Isaac Stern Auditorium at Carnegie Hall. Now, lots of people, including the Department of Education, including Carnegie Hall itself, thought that this had a very strong reservations about us engaging and involving people to fill this 2,800 people hall on a Sunday, and especially Mother's Day, because Mother's Day is typically when people don't go to concerts. And besides that, there were no bus being provided to people, so they all had to come there on their own and completely voluntarily. However, we organized about 2,200 people, 1,700 of which were students and parents and teachers. And they came from over 70 public schools throughout the New York City boroughs, every single borough, actually. And they came in groups of 5 and 7 and 10 from little 2-3-year-old toddlers, held by their mothers, to grandmothers in wheelchairs. And it was actually a really rigorous program of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, which we didn't prepare anybody for. And these were people, young people and older people who are not typical classical music listeners. And they certainly never been to Carnegie Hall, and they have not heard this music. But there was not a peep that came out of the 2-3-year-old toddlers in the audience. They were, afterwards, I was told that there were a few teenager boys who said that they wanted to leave, that originally that they were going to leave halfway through, who never left. And certainly the audience completely understood and appreciated this music. They were sustained applauses throughout this concert, and there was such great interest afterwards, people coming up to me afterwards saying, "We understand what you're saying now about classical music and its ability to inspire. We want to get involved. We want to do something about it." Now, these concerts were organized to uplift and inspire citizens with beauty, but it was also to disprove assumptions, and each succeeded. And Tian was a really important, acute part of this, because he performed it. He performed the music of Bach and Beethoven and Mozart, very importantly. He performed it truthfully, with beauty. And that's what made it actually work. Now, in the course of these concerts, the students and teachers and some of the parents, inspired by the music, came up and said, "Well, how can they participate?" So out of this was this idea of how about getting young people involved in the singing of the music. That's how our Handel project, our Handel choral program, came about. The idea was that everybody, in principle, who knows how to speak a language can sing and sing well. Now, that would be a powerful and concrete, not only idea, but demonstration of causing an individual student to change by means of a social change by creating a new choruses of young people. And if young people can prove to themselves that they can accomplish what they previously thought as an impossible task of understanding through practice the musical thoughts of all these great geniuses, then they free themselves to do what they previously thought or knew the thought as impossible, but knowing now is completely possible. This actually is not really a new idea. This is not a new concept. One of the teachers that I met through the course of organizing these concerts was a assistant principal by the name of Richard Hyman at the Francis Lewis High School in Queens. Richard actually wrote a really powerful research paper titled "Music Training and Brain Development" in 2011. He systematically reviewed more than 600 studies that were published in the past 30 years, which conclusively proves, quoting one neurologist, that making music in group is a tremendously demanding task for the human brain that engages virtually all cognitive processes that we know about, including perception, action, cognition, social cognition, emotion, learning, and memory. This richness makes music an ideal tool to investigate the workings of the human brain. Now, Richard stated in his paper, he said, when Plato wrote his vision of what education should be, only two subjects were recommended, gymnastics for the body and music for the mind. But in this country, right, music class has always been considered minor and extracurricular, and special or enrichment, which is actually a euphemism for expendable, and every time there is a budget cut, music is the first thing that gets cut. And that's what's actually happened in America, in this country, for the last 30 years. And so he wrote this paper, he took this sabbatical as an attempt to get the Department of Education to show them that music is actually not just important, but key, and to get it back into the curriculum. He said that he is convinced this cognitive, perceptual, affective, imaginative undertaking we call aesthetical education can alter the atmosphere in schools. I'm convinced that it must become central if our schools are to become truly educative, stimulating, challenging in the way most of us want them to be. I believe that opening windows and doors for persons, releasing them to use their imaginations and their minds and their perceptual capabilities, may save lives as well as change them. Now, he was truly very concerned about this, because he told me, having spent more than 30 years in the Department of Education, of being a teacher, that today the young people test at 20% of, in both verbal and math skills, of what people who graduated from high school in the 50s tested. So they're like 80% dumber today. And his paper went on to prove that the research of past 30 years, the research of the past 30 years went on to prove that the music training significantly increases many parts of the brain that increase the efficiencies of the brain's work, and as well as the ability of the mind to do many, many things, all of the many things that a person does in life. He went on to say, he said, musicians understand how profoundly music training transforms one's life. Due to the sorry state of musical education in this country, most people are not aware of their own creative potential. They may be exposed to music, but they are taught to think of themselves as listeners, not active participants, and convinced that only special gifted people can perform or compose. The public's role has been reduced to that of a consumer, and much of what they buy is bland and repetitive. The value of musical education is its ability to elevate on every level a person's fundamental humanness and to liberate the imagination so that the student is free to experience beauty in one of its most fulfilling and mature forms. So this is actually what our experiences, that's what we're attempting with the choral programs that we're starting, and with the music concerts that we want to inspire people with. And that's why our foundation's motto is actually artists are the unacknowledged legislators of the world, taken from Percy Bysshe Shelley's A Defense of Poetry. And it's true, right? Poetry actually is a practice. Music actually is a practice. And it's a practice that can be extended to hundreds and thousands and millions of people if we wish it to. And that's something that we all can practice starting from this moment. And just to touch on what we did at our last concert and how we got more people involved, in the course of this, somebody introduced me to soprano Fang Taojiang, whom you all heard from this afternoon, and in the course of the organizing, for example, the last concert was to do something about people affected by Storm Sandy. Also, as it turned out, to do something about what happened recently in Connecticut with the shooting, because a lot of parents became truly distraught at the thought of what is a breakdown in society. So they want to know how they want just to be personally uplifted and to know what to do. And with the help of these classical musicians like Fang Taojiang, we were able to uplift people. We were able to involve people in something that is innately beautiful. And so what does all this say? Well, I think that it absolutely is possible for us to make a significant change and difference in people's lives, to inspire them to practice a different kind of consciousness, right? Classical musical practice can be infectious and effective in comprehensively developing our humanness and our truthfulness. I experienced this, so I know as a fact, coming from where I came from. And certainly today, with the embarrassment of what Beyonce's lip-syncing at the recent presidential inauguration did, and the and the persistent lack of truthfulness practiced by the majority of, or so many of, the American population today, I think the transformative power of classical music is all the more needed and more powerful and something that we ought to all take up more so than ever. So, thank you.